Advices Radio Network.
Advices Radio is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The opinions of the host are not meant to be taken as medical advice. If you have a health concern, see a doctor immediately.
When it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
Welcome to Advices Radio. You're listening to episode number 42. I'm your host, Scott McNally. And up today, we've got, I'm going to say this is going to be a really interesting story. I got a chance to talk to this guy for 15 minutes the other day. I just wanted to hit the record button during that conversation, but I had to wait. And I've got him, back here today. This is a pro strongman, pro wrestler, and now IFBB pro bodybuilder, John Anderson. What's happening, man? How you doing?
I'm doing great, brother. How are you?
Thanks for having me on the show. Hey, I'm doing really good, and I'm really happy to have you here. I wasn't familiar with you, and then one of our mutual friends, Joe Binley, over at Project AD, had posted your picture up, and he mentioned a little blurb about the stuff you've done, and I said, I got to find out more about this guy.
Career started, God, 17 years ago as a pro strongman. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, when you're in the industry at a high level that long, you see a lot of changes. So one of the things that I'm finally having to suck up and get with the program is really starting to, you know, work on my social media. Because when I first started off, you know, God damn, if you self-promoted, you were taking big heat in the locker rooms.
Really?
There was self-promotion was really frowned upon. I mean, granted, keep in mind, you know, a little bit of self-promotion to allure a sponsor or something like that, but not talking about literally trading stories and videos and posting them, you know, to, I mean, keep in mind, there are a lot of social media networks out there who are true, and there's a lot of them that are purely trying to capture these, you know, momentary, you know, circumstantial illusions.
Yeah.
To make somebody look a certain way. You know, one of the jokes amongst, you know, the athletes that actually have records is there's a whole fleet of people out there who get sponsors based on their following. They haven't actually achieved shit.
So
the joke amongst the people who have actually done stuff, rather than just the social media pushers, is don't ever let the truth get in the way of a good social media story.
Ah, nice. You know? Yeah.
So anyway, but then the long and short, I was kind of going off on a tangent there because, you know, I've been high level for a long time, but I haven't really been into, it took me a little while to kind of gravitate towards the self-promotion aspect of social media. Literally, it wasn't until it got to the point where sponsors were equally as interested in that as they were what you achieved. And I thought, okay, I got to start moving with the times.
Interesting.
So there's definitely a little bit of a gap, I would say, where, you know, there's a, you know, because I've actually achieved a lot, but there's a fair amount of people that have not heard about me. As I, here again, I didn't spend a whole lot of time trying to promote myself. And then my middle career being wrestling in Japan, you know, I was in Japan, you know, I mean, on and off for 7 years. You know,
yeah.
So there's a definitely different market over there. But since my career's been fun. A lot of different venues and you know, three completely, well, I shouldn't say completely, but three very different sports or sports entertainment, if you want to call it.
It kind of fascinates me that you've been able to be successful in all these different venues, because I feel like, you know, there's so many people out there that their dream is to just do any one of these things. And for a lot of us, it's hard to just put a plan in action for anything we want to do. I feel like it's got to take a lot of just getting up and doing it. I mean, that's what I get from you, is like, if you want to do something, just get up and make it happen today.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple aspects of that. So, number one, hands down, you know, I'm a huge believer in doing your homework. Meaning, you know, don't just, and what I mean by that is you're eating right, you're training hard, and you don't take breaks. You know, I trained, you know, from the time I was 15, you know, it wasn't until it was my late 20s that I actually started to get traction enough to where I could actually go out and do what I wanted in terms of, you know, being a high-level strength athlete. And so,
yeah,
you know, it's really what I did was, you know, I was not one of these guys who, you know, just said I want to do it and then went and did it just because. I mean, I held myself back and I trained my ass off. And all three of my different sporting careers, strongman, into wrestling, into bodybuilding, I went from literally an unknown onto into being internationally recognized in each sport in less than a year and a half in each one. I mean, bodybuilding, shit, I turned my third ever bodybuilding contest was my pro debut. And it was inside of, shit, that was literally 15 months.
That's
after
amazing.
My first contest.
That's amazing.
So I'm a huge connoisseur of A, doing your homework, and B, that means everything. That means sleep. That means nutrition. That means training. And I don't mean just showing up. I mean, you know, keeping that hunger, you know, staying focused on what you want to achieve, you know, doing things. One of the things that I say to people is, if you want to reach goals, you got to get outside your comfort zone, period. You got to do something that scares the shit out of you every day, or you're never going to make big strides forward.
Give me an example of something in your life right now where you're still doing that, where you're still challenging yourself and you're doing something that scares the shit out of you, but you know you've got to do this to take the next step.
No, man, I'm living it as we speak. Saturday is 2 weeks out from my first bodybuilding contest of this year.
Okay.
And every time I put together, so when I do a prep, I don't just, okay, I did this is what I did last time. I look at what I did. Look at what I did with my coaches, and we basically create a new variation, which is going to be tougher, which is going to create a bigger, better result. But keep in mind, you can smell the pain and the discomfort in the changes that we create. So, you know, you can't have this attitude of, you know, this is going to be really hard. Yes, it's going to be hard, but because it's hard, you're going to get a better result. And you got to just literally put shit in your sights. Put obstacles in your way on purpose that are going to be challenging, that are going to make you grow. And, you know, one of the things that's really been killer with all my three careers, and I'm in it right now with bodybuilding, is when you go from unknown to internationally recognized, you know, so basically bodybuilding, won my first contest, got my pro card, did my pro debut. Now, shit, man, I'm standing on my third ever contest. I'm standing next to guys who have been doing this as pros for 5, 6, 8, 10 years, you know, and I was my first goddamn contest. And so, I mean, talk about putting yourself in some fast moving current when you barely know how to swim, you know, I mean, keep in mind, I mean, I know the body, I know training, I know dieting, but each one of these different sports, it's a totally different craft. You know, you have to master a new craft, and there's no better way to master it than, you know, getting in right into the mix of the best guys in the world and seeing how you stack up, because a good kick to the dick is going to motivate you a lot more than a pat on the back.
Yeah, no question about that.
So that was one of the things that with bodybuilding actually has been, it's not a big deal for me to tell people how new I am. You know, it's actually more surprising and kind of comical, to be honest, for some. But when I went to Japan, my agent and I, we had to cover up and basically the fact that I had never done that before.
Really?
So he put together, they're not going to, it's a money thing. You know, they're not going to contract somebody paying big money when they don't know what the fuck they're doing.
I see. That makes sense.
So basically, you know, I got over there, he basically put together a fake resume, said I knew what I was doing. And I think they had an idea that there was some level of stretching the truth there, but the way I looked got me the opportunity.
Yeah.
And so he told me, he's like, look, dude, you got, mini tour, which is basically a week and a half. You go over there, you wrestle three, four, five times, depending on the tour. And at the end of it, they're either going to sign you or send you home, and that'll be the end. Don't fuck this up. Yeah. And so, basically, in that career, I had to completely hide the fact that I didn't know what I was doing, which was really made it really, really much different deal in terms of kind of as a talk about being scared. You know, you're trying to get a big contract.
Yeah.
These people are speaking a language and talking about stuff that you have no idea what they're talking about. You're pretending you know. You know?
I can only imagine.
So, of course, you know, basically, I ended up doing well enough to get signed and spent the next 7 years, you know, hiding the fact that I had, you know, like that my first match in Japan was a pay-per-view. It was like my sixth ever wrestling match.
Okay.
You know, and keep in mind, the ones that I did before that were just these crusty little, you know, high school gym hand job matches, because I had to get some ring experience. I couldn't show up there. Never been in the ring. But I mean, you're talking about, you know, these are not good wrestlers. That's why they're on that. That's why they're wrestling at high school gyms.
Okay.
And so I go from six matches wrestling with shitty wrestlers to basically, you know, high level on pay-per-view. Hmm. And not to mention the guys I'm in the ring with don't speak English.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So anyway, so there's a perfect example of knowing that you're putting yourself in a position that's going to be really daunting, scare the shit out of you, but that's what makes you drive. Well, you flop yourself into that fast moving current, you have no choice. It's sink or swim. And if you're a swimmer, you're going to get with the program. You know, if you fold, you're going to drown, and that's the end.
So yeah.
That's a classic example. I'm talking, there we go. We're talking about putting myself in a line of fire for year after year, you know?
No kidding. Yeah, that's pretty intense. Now, the other day when we were talking, you know, you were telling me about the foundation of all this, which is, you know, as you just said, doing your homework, you know, figuring out what works for you. You found that carbs in your nutrition weren't necessarily going to be the answer for you. I thought that was an interesting story to hear, you know, how you had to, you thought for yourself. You didn't just kind of take what, you know, the muscle magazines and everybody else in the media was saying at the time. You listened to your body. And I feel like going back, this is going to be the foundation of what allowed you to build the physique that's allowed you to do all these things. Could you talk a little bit about back then?
Absolutely. Speaking of which, what we're going into now, so I have I don't know if I told this when we spoke last time, but my first ebook is called Deep Water. And it really goes in. It was actually published before I turned pro bodybuilder.
Okay.
So it actually drops off right at the end of my wrestling career. But it really goes into a lot of what we're going to talk about next in terms of nutrition and doing things, you know, that where you're, you know, you're putting yourself in that position where you have to succeed. And then it was a great publication, and it starts off with me being a fat little boy. And so every overweight person that stumbled across that book resonates with my story, and it's so exciting when someone reads my book and then they email in and say, you know, this is changing my life.
Yeah.
You know, really, really killer stuff. Anyway, so on that level, my second book called Feed the Cycle of Greatness is going to release, I think, next month. We'll have to maybe jump on another show and go to that once it's out. That's really killer, because really what it does, and this is why I wanted to bring it up, is because deep water is like, okay, this is really tough shit, go do it. And, you know, there's just not everybody that has that. And so Feed the Cycle of Greatness goes into some of the more foundational steps, you know.
Okay.
If you don't have discipline, here's how you create it. If you start to, you know, look yourself in the mirror, understand who you are, work with your strengths to make those gains, but fill in the gaps of your weaknesses.
Yeah.
So really, really what those two books are kind of going into what we're going to talk about next, which is where I started off as a fat little boy. You know, it's just weird. Sometimes, you know, I would say I was blessed, because I knew what I wanted. I had no idea how I was going to get there, but I knew I was just so enthralled with big, powerful people, man or woman. And so I knew there was this thing in my gut that was drawing me there. But here again, I'm looking for greatness in the bottle of an ice cream container. And so, you know, having a weight problem, and, you know, I had a pretty whopping case of OCD, couldn't read well. And that was one of the hiccups in the whole early days of the process of me learning, was that, you know, there wasn't a lot of journals out there like there is today where people are truly passing on information. It was magazines, you know?
Yeah.
But the magazines weren't so, you know, filled with articles that looked like articles that were actually sales advertisements. So there was some solid information, but the problem was I couldn't read worth shit to get it out of there. So the long and short of it is, you know, I'm working ass off in the gym, and, you know, I'm going off of, you know, kind of bro science, if you will, what I'm hearing. And
sure.
At that time, it was, you know, carbohydrates, carbs, carbs, carbs. I'm fucking, I'm like, you know, 15, 16, 17 years old. I'm sitting down with a loaf of bread, just eating bread, because I'm convinced that's going to build muscle. And that's what that kind of displays, you know, the focus I had. You know, I'd sit down and for lunch in my high school cafeteria, pull out a loaf of bread, and my buddies are looking at me, what the fuck are you doing?
You're telling me you sat down at lunchtime in high school, you were eating a whole loaf of bread every day?
Sometimes more than that, you know?
But you thought this was the answer, right? At the time, you thought, yeah, I mean, this is how you're going to reach your goals.
Exactly. I mean, if it would have said spread some dog turd on top of it, I've done that too.
Sure. And I think we've all been there. You know, I think we've all been there, and we've all made mistakes but with the best intentions.
Absolutely. So basically, what happens is I'm training my ass off, and I don't quite realize. I mean, I'm working hard, real hard, and I know that I'm not making the progress that I should, but it's not deterring me. I know that there's some missing pieces of my puzzle. And so it was, I can't remember the exact, it was summertime, I remember that. And somehow we ended up being out bred. And so I'm fixing, you know, food for myself, and we had a bunch of canned tuna. So I ended up eating canned tuna for a couple of days before my mom went to the store with some eggs, you know, because she always makes me eggs in the morning. And number one, I felt different. It was like, wow, you know, I can't really describe what was different, but if you go from basically a straight carbohydrate diet to, you know, a fat and protein diet with minimal carbs, and at that point, I didn't really understand the depths of how the macros work.
Okay.
I just knew that I needed to get food in my stomach, you know? And so after a couple of days, I realized there's something here. And so I kept running with it. And the next thing you know, I realized, God damn, I'm getting strong fast, and I feel better. You know, the feeling better was an interesting thing because at that age, you know, it's like you don't really know yourself very well yet. So for me to notice that I felt better eating more protein and fat-oriented foods, there had to be a big change. At the time, I didn't quite realize how big it was. But the big key for me was all of a sudden, inside a short period of time, I noticed a big change in my strength. And that was a lock. So I started pushing the envelope on protein, and the more I ate, the better it got. And so I started doing a little, you know, thinking and started breaking it down. There's fats, there's proteins, there's carbohydrates. So at the time, there wasn't a whole lot of essential fat talk going on. Fat was actually considered to be kind of the enemy at that point.
What period was this? What are we talking about? 1990, early 90s?
Yeah, this is like, 90, early 90s.
Okay,
yeah.
That's when they used to call them carbos, too. You remember that?
Yeah.
Carbos, yeah.
So basically, through the whole process of me, you know, basic trial and error, I started to recognize that, okay, when I waste space in my stomach, because keep in mind, I'm eating volume at the time. I want to get big and strong. So if I'm not full, I'm eating. And so I started to realize, you know, if I don't put this tuna in the bread, I can get more tuna in my gut. And so I started to realize, okay, I noticed there was a big difference from the tuna without the bread, you know, and I'm kind of an extremist by nature. So I just kept pushing the envelope. And next thing you know, shit, a year and a half later, I'm basically, my system had evolved before. I'm eating a minimum of 4 pounds of chicken or beef a day.
Four pounds.
And at that point, I'm telling you, man, my weight and my strength was skyrocketing.
So
I mean, I was doing things in the gym that people never seen before.
How much were you weighing then back then, eating 4 pounds of beef or meat?
Well, by the time I turned into that, I probably made that switch around 220 pounds. And by that was like first, that was, you know, somewhat in the middle of college. By the end of college, I was solid 250, two, try 255, 260, but I was strong as a house.
Okay.
I mean, I would, that, you know, it's kind of interesting. My training was, I didn't really have a, you know, a mentor. Here again, my training was very trial and error, and I loved to do things that was going to challenge myself that I felt like gave me the biggest steps forward. And what I was talking about earlier about scaring the shit out of yourself.
Yeah.
Here's a classic example. You know, put 4 or 5 on the bar and see how many times you can squat it before you crash.
Hmm.
That's pretty daunting, you know. So
it's tough.
You know, that was a very regular type squat training for me.
Yeah.
You know, years I did. Of course, I'm going into different commercial gyms. You know, I was at college, so we had a facility there. But if I went to a commercial gym, I'd look 4 or 5 and knock out 20, 25 reps, and people look at me going, "What the hell is this guy doing?" You know. And I think I really, at that point, I liked being able to go into a gym and do shit that nobody else in there could do. So
yeah,
that was telling me I was on the right track. You know, I'm just a kid. You know, you got, you know, guys that are 30 that aren't even sniffing what I'm doing.
Sure.
You know, and they're bigger than me too. So long and short of it, all this training and all the nutrition just kept going and going and going. And then Strawman came along.
Yeah.
And once I discovered Strawman and decided I was going to give it a shot, I looked at my training and I was like, God damn. You know, the way I've been training for the last, you know, almost decade, you know, at least 5 years, has been really complementary to the sport of strongman. Hmm. You know, like, for example, squatting 405 for max reps, that might take you 75 to 90 seconds. Well, what's a strongman event?
Hmm.
Full bore for 60 to 90 seconds.
Yeah.
You know? And so it all just seemed like the stars kind of aligned, you know, and so basically through, you know, developing my nutrition, training my ass off, Strawman kind of flopped in my lap, and I went, did my first contest, you know, won my pro card the next one, and then boom, next thing you know, I placed high enough in the U.S. Nationals to start traveling internationally, and off I went. But here's the biggest thing that I came to realize, not so much at the time, but looking back, I fully see it and understand it, and I preach this 100% today. So you break down 3 macronutrients. You've got protein, fat, and carbohydrate. We don't have to argue anything about protein. We all know what that means.
Sure.
It's the essential building block for muscle. Let's put that one aside. Okay? Then we go into fat, which is a great energy source. But now we're talking essential fats, not junk fat.
Right.
Great energy source. And it does things like have everything to do with the health of your skin, your fingernails, your hair. So you can look at the healing properties this thing has. So think about what that's going to do to muscle tissue.
Mm, yeah.
So it's really it's kind of a multidimensional macronutrient, you know. So as protein as well, because just recently they've proven excess protein will actually be burned as fuel.
Sure.
So you've got multidimensional macronutrients. Now we get to the carbohydrate. It has only one energy, period.
Right.
So the problem is there's nothing more to it. Have you ever heard anybody say, don't forget to eat your essential carbohydrates?
Right.
That doesn't exist.
Right.
You know, and the majority of carbohydrates that people eat are in a goddamn box or in a bag, which means it's processed, which causes all sorts of problems anyway. So it's simple math. You've got 3 macronutrients. One of them serves one purpose. The other has multiple purposes. So just like on anything, you get rid of the weak link, you're going to be a stronger unit.
Hmm.
And so I basically just dropped carbs out, not so much for any other reason other than the fact that I needed the room in my stomach for what I knew was going to help me progress.
Interesting.
And then as I got a little older in strongman, realizing that, okay, now these contests are not just one day, they're 2 days. And so you compete your ass off for the first day. There's absolutely no way that fat is going to load in time to prepare you for the following day. So I started to realize, okay, carbohydrate has to exist as a tool. You know, if used properly, it's like a jackhammer. If you use it improperly, you know, it becomes a crutch. And I in the Power Magazine article I did, I compare carbohydrates to a painkiller because let's say you twist your ankle, you take that painkiller for a couple of days, you know, you get through it, you're good to go, you stop.
Yeah.
Now the flip side, you take that painkiller for 6 months, now you need it.
Yeah.
It's not the jackhammer of a tool to help you. It becomes something you need to live on a daily basis. The problem is, what's the upside? You know, and that's where I basically make that comparison to the carbohydrate.
Interesting.
You know, in bodybuilding, you know, wrestling, wrestling, the only carbohydrate I ever really ingested was in beer when I was with sponsors because, you know, the Japanese sponsors take you out to dinner and spend $6,000 on dinner. They want to have a beer and a toast. You better drink it with them. You know?
Oh, yeah.
So, but in terms of like using carbohydrates, part of my regular regimen of wrestling, I had no reason to, you know? And then in terms of bodybuilding, the simple math there, you know, that's something you use right at the tail end. You know, I don't use it so much from a loading factor. I use fat for that.
Okay.
But I definitely use it at the tail end, the morning of, to, you know, you ingest carbohydrate, and basically what you're doing is just as it digests, it requires water. And so any water that may be left in the skin, it's going to pull out of there to digest the carbohydrate you ate before stage time. So here again, used properly, carbohydrate is a very powerful tool. But you use it all the time, it's a crutch.
So you're telling me that through this diet, you don't rely on carbs through the week. Do you, just out of curiosity, have you done any type of cheat meals or refeeds through the diet where you have used carbs, or have you kept them out entirely?
So basically what I do is I use, because a refeed is one of these things, it's kind of a, really, because you know, the way ketosis works, you know, a lot of people know the science, but without going too deep into it, basically, your body goes into hyper-fat burning mode because it creates a ketone. Once your brain sends a signal to burn more fat. So when you go into hyper-fat burning mode, it's almost like somebody sprinting down the street.
Yeah.
Well, at some point, you're gonna run out of gas, and that sprint's going to turn into a jog. Once that jog hits, you have to give yourself a refeed to basically kind of shake your body loose of being bogged down, let it recharge, and take off again. And so most people, you know, they say refeed, and they're in a fucking pizza parlor eating an extra large pizza.
right.
So really, you know, I've been carbless so long, I can refeed myself on, you know, essential fats that I know I digest well. MCT oils digest really quickly for me, and I can tell if I've taken in enough carbohydrate, enough fat, that basically it acts as a carbohydrate would in terms of jump-starting my system. You know,
okay.
Like one of the tricks I'll do is I'll take in, you know, fairly large amounts of fat second half of the day before I go to bed. So through the night, my body gets a chance to work with that. And when I wake up, I can kind of tell if I'm back square or not, or if I need more. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, but for most people, I would be totally honest with you, most people that are not really proficient carb-free, they're going to need some sort of a carbohydrate to get that, to, you know, create that refeed effect where the body wakes up. What I would suggest in that situation is using some sort of an MCT or a fat to control the load because, or the refeed, because, you know, people slap too many calories in too quick and basically, you know, you spill over.
Yeah.
So you, all that fat burning you did, you basically three steps forward, two steps back if you treat the reloading properly.
Interesting. Yeah. So with your reloads, just out of curiosity, what are we talking? Like, just what do you normally get on an average day for grams of fat? And then if you were to do a reload using MCT or other, you know, medium chain fats like coconut oil, what gram wise per day, how would you increase that?
Well, like right now, being so close to my show, basically I'll be down as I'm working with Joe Finley, you know, which is great. We think so much alike because he's also a keto guy.
Yeah.
And so here at the end, when I'm, you know, grind fucking nutties at Fruitcake. He can basically kind of call my shots for me, which is nice because most times what he sends me is kind of what I figured is coming, but I don't have to figure it out. I have to think. I have to calculate numbers.
Yeah.
So, what, like today, actually, we had me on basically almost no fat, no carbohydrate for Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Now, today, we're giving me a basically, we lower the protein a little bit because we jacked the fat way up. Today's a 400 gram fat day.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah. So, basically, what happens is now basically my body's waking back up, you know?
Yeah.
So, then it goes back into hyper mode and off I go. So, but I would say, you know, kind of getting back to what we're talking about in terms of what makes all of this stuff fit together is doing your homework, as I said. And that training is one part, but the diet is so much bigger.
Yeah.
You know, people end up, you know, really not truly staying committed to their diets. You know, they don't do it year. They'll do it partially or, you know, they, like, for example, for me, I'm weighing out my food year round because it's all data for me. You know?
Yeah.
It's like if I'm just kind of eating willy-nilly, there's no information that I'm gaining. You know? You know, as an athlete, you evolve every year. And so I can't think that this year is going to be the same as last year or I wouldn't have gotten any better. And so when I'm constantly, you know, keeping track of what I'm eating, it's you know, it's a great way for me to stay right on top of what is working the best, what's too much, what's not enough. And that's what I'm talking about, doing your homework. Because, you know, the people that are successful in whatever they choose to do, they do it all the time. They don't do it, you know, more of a, you know, kind of more of an amateur way of thinking, especially in bodybuilding. You know, these guys will eat like shit, and then 16 weeks, they'll do their prep. But, you know, their first 3 weeks of their prep is wasted just trying to get on track, you know, as to where 16 weeks hits for me, I already know what, I mean, I'm, you know, it's just small adjustments. You know?
Yeah. So are you using a protein fat diet for your off season as well? When you're trying to make improvements and progress, or is that just
Absolutely.
For the, okay. Wow. And kind of what I'm inferring as well. And going back, you know, you said that you were eating mostly high protein and you found that that had worked early on. You've made a lot of your progress not using carbohydrates just across the board, haven't you?
Oh, man, pretty much all of them. I'm so, you know, over the top with talking about how the three macros work is because, let's say 30 years, you know, I've been training and trying to, I mean, I didn't have my diet figured out for 30. Let's call it 20.
Okay.
If I had been, let's just pretend for a real rounded figure, 30%, somebody's eating 30% carbohydrate. In my opinion, that's 30% basically space in my stomach or in my digestive system that is wasted for the shit that could actually truly help me get better. Now, is it a little more comfortable going, you know, living without carbohydrates? Absolutely. But here again, you don't get where you want to go being comfortable.
Yeah.
So, yes, yeah, so that's been a pretty big staple. You know, and the thing about it is just like anything else, once you do it, it's really not nearly as bad as you think.
Yeah.
It's just getting over that first initial hump. You get 2 weeks into this process and truly stay in it, it gets better and better.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen that in my own life when I've used a keto diet, that after you get the carbs out of your system, your body does adjust. I think everybody who's, you know, committed to the diet has seen that. I just have, I don't think I've ever talked to somebody who used keto year round. So you're a great example then of somebody who has found, you know, a lot of success with that. And I assume that you do your lab work and that everything's looking healthy. So I think that that's a great testament to what, how individual people are. And how a keto diet can be so beneficial. Hey, listen, I want to hear more about your careers. Tell me about the first one, which was Strongman. You know, I kind of can infer that you enjoyed strength. You know, you told me you were getting strong in the gym. And I just imagine that even when you were younger, you were probably throwing around some heavy weights. How did that evolve into actually competing?
So it was kind of like I said before, you know, first I was a late bloomer. I was a chubby kid, so I was really fighting out of kind of a corner, so to speak. And, you know, through later part of high school and college, you know, I kind of left that behind. You know, I started getting stuff figured out, started getting big, getting strong. And basically my childhood slash college training partner, one of my best friends, he came to me one day and he said, dude, and we competed a lot, meaning with each other, each other. So it wasn't like we passed around a lot of compliments to each other. You know, the other thing, it was the other way around. Yeah. That's how we motivate each other. He comes to me. This is very different for him to say something like this. He says, dude, he said, you are, you know, a big, strong guy. He goes, but you are so much stronger than you look. You have got to go try one of these competitions. And, you know, I think it's somewhere in the, you know, not too long before that, we'd probably been watching strongman competition on TV. And boom. So I started looking into it, you know, get on the net and, you know, find out where these competitions are, what the weights are. And I started looking like, God damn, I can do this, you know? And so basically what I did was, this is great. So I basically have only gym lifting experience, no strongman experience at all.
No kidding.
No equipment, wow. No nothing. So I basically, what I do is I look at the first contest I'm going to go to and I say, okay, I need to acquire this stuff so I can work on it.
Yeah.
And so one of them was a tire flip, you know, and the other one was stones.
Okay.
And so basically I went to, got a tire, had a couple of stones made, and then a buddy of mine had this big piece of property, probably 15 minutes north where I live, just big open field. So I go out there, it's out in the open, there's no shade, you know, it's California summer. So I go out there with a, you know, like an old school sling blade and cut this waist-high grass down in about a 30 by 30 square and bring this equipment out there.
It sounds like a Rocky movie. It sounds like a Rocky movie or something.
Oh, buddy, and here's a perfect example. Here's a guy who has no experience. So you put an Atlas stone on dirt, and see how easy that is to work with. You know,
I never thought of that.
Because, you know, oh my God, and even the tire. I mean, every time that thing flops down, a big old puff of dust comes out. Everything's dusty, everything's slippery.
Yeah.
But I was out there, didn't know any better, and I was teaching myself to do this shit. And so I went to my first competition, won it, and basically the owner at the time of NASS was Willie Wessels. And he said, this is your first competition. You've got a lot of potential. You need to come to the national championship and win your pro card. And so I said, I'd love it. But, man, I mean, this was a tough deal for me to do. I have no equipment. Nobody knows. Nobody can tell me what to do. So he hooked me up with a guy that was about 2 hours away. So I would drive 2 hours, train for 3 or 4, drive back 2 hours. And I would do that basically as many times as I needed to, guaranteed once a week, sometimes two, basically getting prepared for winning my contest. I've won my pro card, and at that point now, I've got enough connections with people because I've been in a sport where, you know, it's very, very, there's a lot of camaraderie. People are very helpful.
Oh, yeah.
Now that I've got, you know, at that time, I hooked up with, you know, he was one of my best friends in strongman, bless his heart and soul, rest in peace, Jesse Morunde. And Jesse was hugely helpful to me in the beginning and, you know, helping me just understand what different techniques and what to do. And, you know, then you start getting up into the higher levels and everybody's helpful. You know, and then I start traveling with guys like, you know, Colin Gillingham, Mark Phillippe, Phil Fisher. And, you know, I'm just soaking up the knowledge.
Nice.
And now at that point, I'm in it. You know, I'm an international player. I'm very new. And here again, talk about being, put yourself in a scary situation. These guys have been competing for 6, 8, 10 years.
Yeah.
I've been competing. My first internal competition was my fourth competition.
Wow.
You know, so that was strong, man. Then basically at that point, off I went and had a great strongman career. Loved it. Strength is definitely my true love. It was a great time because that was what they called, you know, strongman era. It was called the modern day strongman, which was perfect for me because, you know, at 6 foot, 6'1" ish, you know, over 300 pounds, I was able to compete and do really well.
Okay.
Nowadays you're talking, you're not 6'5" at 360.
Yeah.
You're a midget and a shrimp.
Yeah. You know? They're monsters today for sure.
So the timing was definitely right. And then I basically went from there into, I'd ruptured a disc.
Mm.
I ruptured this early in my career, but I wasn't going to stop because I got where I wanted to go. And I wasn't going to, I wasn't even going to go to the doctors to find out what was wrong.
Hmm.
I was just dealing with it. And I didn't know it was ruptured until it got to the point it was so bad where I was starting to lose feeling in my left foot.
Okay.
That was where the nerve was being pinched. So I had no choice at that point. And at this point, I'd kind of come to the back half of my strongman career anyway. So I just say, open me up, fix the disc. Said I had another one above that was basically severely bulged. The one above that was bulged too.
Wow.
So I beat myself up pretty good. And so it was time to move on. And so basically called my agent. We talked it over. He said that, that was pretty much it. Wrestling was the next stop for me if I wanted to continue to be a pro athlete and make a living. And so off I went.
Nice. So,
put me in. Go ahead.
I was just gonna segue a little there, and I think you were kind of going in the same direction. That from there is when you started moving toward wrestling. What even made you think that wrestling would be the next direction that you wanted to go?
Well, so basically, strongman was a great experience, and in Europe, it was a very big platform. You would be not uncommon to have 6, 8, 10, 12,000 people watching a strongman event in, somewhere in Europe, sometimes more than that,
Yeah.
And so it was a platform in Europe was so much bigger than in the States. And I thought to myself, God, I would love to get into a bigger platform as a sport. And so with my strongman career, because my surgeon told me, look, you're all fixed up, but if you go back to what you're doing, you're going to be back here in 18 months having that next disc fixed. And so I just, you can see the writing on the wall.
Okay.
Do you want to just beat yourself to death
and
get pushed out? Or do you want to go out when you feel good about where you are?
Yeah.
And so that's what I chose. What I chose to do.
I understand. And, I gotcha.
Yeah. The same thing with wrestling. So I segued getting into how I got into wrestling.
Yeah.
And then I existed, at a high level for the next little more than 7 years, almost 8 years.
But what made you think that wrestling was going to be, because I think I feel like for a lot of people, they'd be like, oh, I hurt my back. I guess I need to not do something so physical. And then their next thought is usually not, why don't I become a pro wrestler?
Well, I don't really factor in, is it going to hurt? Is it going to be difficult?
Yeah,
those are not part of my concerns. My concerns is, can I pull this off?
Okay.
And so, but I knew that there was going to be some pain and anguish, and it was going to be tough, and it was going to be hard on me.
Yeah.
And I had more, ended up having, have surgeries in wrestling too.
Really?
But the bottom line was that I wanted to get onto a bigger platform.
Okay, I see.
At 34 years old, where else are you going to go? There's no other bigger platform than wrestling. I didn't have mainstream potential.
Okay.
So there was really no choice.
I see.
It's not like at that time, there was no, even now. I mean, there's very few powerlifters that make any real money. Have real killer sponsors. As for a strongman, because of TV, that was absolutely part of the game.
I see.
And wrestling is televised big time. So when there's TV involved, you got contracts, you got merchandising, and that's what I want. So off I went.
So I basically
got over there and ended up, like I said, had a great stay over there. But then at the end of 2013, when I wasn't going to get put back into a solid position with the company.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. Okay, what are you going to do? You're going to sit here and hold on as long as you can and end up, slowly going back to the beginning? Or here again, I didn't have a beginning. So am I going to hold on and go back and work shitty little high school matches. I mean, I did a couple of those just so I could get practice enough to get this first go.
Okay.
I'll be damned if I'm going to go back there. If I'm not going to get paid, I'm not going to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And so, like, basically at that point, I said, oh, fuck, here we are again. Now I'm 42. You know, what do we do? And so, you know, at that point, you know, really the only thing I could think of that had, you know, any real potential, and I was, as a youngster, I was a huge bodybuilding fan, you know.
Okay.
But, you know, I just thought, well, here we go. I've always been told I look like a bodybuilder. Let's give it a shot.
Nice.
But, you know, with me, I don't just say, oh, I'm going to go try. You know, I set big goals. You know, if my goals are, if people understand my goals, then I didn't make them big enough. That's what I like to say.
Hey, before we get into the bodybuilding stuff, and, you know, that's where all of our listeners are, we're all bodybuilding fans, and we have had a pro wrestler on here before from Canada, Jordan Chase, and we've talked to a lot of different strong men and women too. So I think that we're kind of covering all the spectrums here. I want to ask you, though, spending all that time in Japan, what was that like? What was it like being a guy that's over 6 foot and just huge, like living in Japan, an American? Because I feel like in general, it's just such a unique and different place. But especially for someone as a pro wrestler, it had to be such a surreal experience.
Yeah, it was pretty trippy, man. You know, here again, I was looking for the bigger platform.
Yeah.
You know, the first time you walk out, you know, like a Tokyo Dome show, you know, 55,000 people.
Wow.
And you walk out, you're walking down the, you know, down the ramp. Remember the first time I'm walking down there, I'm looking around, and it is fucking huge. Hmm. And basically, some of the staff has said, look, they took some of the guys who had wrestled in that venue before. This is so big, and they pull you aside and say, look, when you do something, you know, that creates sound, that you're going to expect the crowd to respond to.
Yeah.
You know, like, I was a big chopper. I could make a real loud sound with a chop, and just then the crowd ate it up. You got to wait, because the sound takes time to carry. It's so big in there.
Wow.
So basically, pop, you smack somebody. You're used to hearing the pop, the crowd go right away. Tokyo Dome, you pop them, you know, second half later, whoa. So you really have to slow it down.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's a trip, you know, but, you know, the whole, talk about surreal. I mean, walking down to the ring and, you know, I'm looking up at the top row and I can't even see people up there, you know, but it's just here again, it's talk about surreal. Absolutely. You know, we got treated like, you know, like stars of in a big way. You know, we'd be, you know, after matches, you know, there would be, you know, sponsors would come to the company and say, hey, I want to take these athletes out to dinner.
Wow.
And so we, you know, it wouldn't be uncommon for us to, you know, go out and spend for 3 or 4 wrestlers to spend. And granted, we're with the sponsors, you know, and they want pictures, they want autographs and all that shit. That's fine. But
yeah,
they're also paying a $5,000-$6,000 dinner tab.
Wow.
You know,
it just, yeah, so, blows my mind, man. It's so fascinating. That whole part of life had to be just so different than anything else.
Yeah, it was really cool. And keep in mind, this was the platform I was working for. So it was really, you know, it was really killer to, you know, basically take that huge risk, because, you know, basically the way I went about it, you know, I basically put all the marbles on the table. I could have got discovered and blackballed right away.
But yeah.
I pulled it off, you know, because wrestling, you know, they don't want to sink, you know, any sort of investment into somebody unless they feel like, you know, they're going to do well, you know. And so experience is that security blanket, you know.
Yeah, I could see that for sure, man. So flashing forward then and kind of getting up to the present, you got into bodybuilding. You said you only competed for like 14, 15 months before you had turned pro. And did you say it was your third show that you had turned pro at?
My third show was my pro debut.
Oh, that was your pro debut. So you did a national qualifier, and then from there you did a pro qualifier. Where did you turn pro at?
Pittsburgh.
Okay, turned pro at Pittsburgh, and then from there, what show was your pro debut? And
my pro debut was the Golden State, and that was a killer one. I mean, it was you know, here again, I'd never been on stage with these upper echelon guys. Next thing you know, I'm standing next to Cedric McMillan. Holy shit.
God. Yeah. Killer. He's a killer.
Yeah. Oh, God. You know, and just such a different physique. I'm more of a brick shit house. He's this, you know, he's this tall, like, you know, really aesthetic,
yeah,
full muscle belly, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But it was really killer. It was a great experience. And here again, it's kind of like, you know, getting thrown into that real fast moving current. You either sink or swim.
Yeah.
And so that's where I am in bodybuilding. Basically, I had my pro debut. Well, and I placed fifth, which was killer to podium my first contest. I was jacked.
That's huge.
And then and then basically my second season, which was last year, I didn't do so well. But at the same time, of course, during the time, I was not happy. I didn't place in the top 10 once. And okay. I was pissed. But like I said before, a good kick to the dick is a lot more motivating than, you know. So it really gave me a chance to reflect. I don't look back and reflect unless I'm trying to figure out what went wrong. Otherwise, I'm always looking for the next step. So basically, I was able to kind of look back and restructure and, you know, kind of, you really are just kind of trying to become a better version of yourself.
Yeah.
And so that was a really, although at the time I was not happy, you know, the bottom line is that it yields a lot of positive steps forward, you know, with that disappointment and, you know, being pissed off at yourself and everything else. So this year coming around, you know, I'm bigger, I'm in better shape. I've worked on some of the weaknesses that I have, you know, and so we'll see what happens. I'm excited.
So we're two weeks out now. What contest are you going to be at?
So this Saturday is 2 weeks. My first contest this year is going to be the Cal Pro in LA.
Nice.
And then based on how that goes, I'm going to kind of decide where to go from there.
Okay.
Because the goal is to get to on the Olympia stage.
Yeah.
And so so basically the bottom line is that, you know, the way it works, you either got to win one of these smaller shows or you got to grab points along the way and pour
right.
in. And so the real way to do it for somebody like myself that has not been around a long time is to, as soon as the Olympia's over, you start gathering points.
Yeah, that's a lot of work, man. That's a lot of work.
Oh, buddy. Yeah, but the thing is, for this year, I wasn't just going to hold off and start doing shows after Olympia. I needed to kind of get one under my belt this year and make sure what I've been working on is actually going to have the effects that I want, so that when I gear back down, my next contest this year will be the Fringo Classic, which is post Olympia, and then hopefully Cal Pro goes well. I see the improvements I made, see where I got to go, then basically cool off a little bit, and then prep again for the Fringo and start grabbing points. That's the plan.
Nice. That's pretty badass, man. So what have you worked on? What were the things that you were looking to improve since last time around?
Well, the biggest thing, two things really, is that, you know, sir, during the period of in Strongman, I squatted a ton. Squatting events were actually my strength. So I had truck pulls, so I had big old thick legs. But then in wrestling, you know, you're on tour, you're wrestling so much, you got to skip a lot of leg training, at least heavy.
I could see
that. Because, you know, you just don't have the time to recover. You know, you can't be,
sure.
I can't be in the ring doing what I got to do if I squatted, you know, 700 pounds earlier that day or the day before.
Sure.
You know?
Not to mention traveling and everything else, man. It's tough to train hard when you're not going to the gym you're used to going to, when you're not in that groove, you know?
Yeah. I mean, for the most part, I was able to, you know, maintain and stay in great shape, but I wasn't making a lot of forward progress in terms of my physique. But at that time, that's not what it was about. What it was about for me in wrestling was keeping my physique and using it in the ring to, you know, to kind of show my character. My character was Strongman. Gotta love that name, huh? So basically, when I came out of wrestling, I mean, my legs were not small, but they were not, they didn't match my upper body the way they should have in wrestling.
Okay.
You know, everybody thought my physique was perfect, but, you know, bodybuilding is a whole different creature. You're being judged on how it really fits together.
Sure.
So basically, I had to get my legs up, and, you know, I had some pretty good, you know, my legs were pretty, I just get pretty beat up from wrestling. You know, a lot of, you know, I had to stretch my IT band a few times on both sides of my legs.
Okay.
So I was having a hard time getting back into heavy squatting. But anyway, so now that I've got, you know, my training back in line to build my legs back up, the next thing was, you know, through the strength days in strongman, you know, your waist thickens from supporting all that heavy weight.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Basically what I had to do there was learn how to control my abs to keep my stomach flat.
Okay.
But then B, I put a ton of time into understanding how to contract my obliques to pull my sides in. Like if I'm standing in a front relaxed position, and I'm standing there flexing just my abs, meaning just the front six pack.
Yeah.
And then you snap your finger and I pull in my obliques on the side, I can pull damn near an inch off each side.
I'm doing it right now. I've never actually squeezed like that before, but I can see exactly what you're talking about. So you've been training yourself to do that and kind of, as you said, you're going to control your waist better. That's huge, man. Tough to do too on stage, because for anybody there who hasn't competed, when you're under those lights and you know, you're dehydrated, man, it takes some conditioning to be on that stage.
Oh God. Oh yeah. I mean, I sit there, once I basically learned how to contract the muscles the way I wanted to.
Yeah.
You know, then I just sit there and crank down and hold them until I can't hold them anymore. At very first it was 5, 6, 7 seconds. You know, now I can hold it there for 30, 40 seconds, which is ample time. I'll never need that much, but
yeah,
who knows, if you're in the back row long enough, you might have to sit there and do that, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I should say the back row, you know, when they line you up on the sides.
Sure.
You know,
I knew what you meant.
When they're moving people around.
Yeah.
So, but it's, you know, here again, you hit it on the head. It's fucking hard, man, but you can't run away from shit that's hard. You got to dive into it. You know, that's what we talked about. You know, put yourself in a position where you're uncomfortable. That's what's going to make you get better.
Yeah. You know,
do I want to stand in front of the mirror and work on contracting my abs for 30 minutes a day? Hell no. But I do it. So.
Yeah. I'm looking at your pictures right now, too. And I want to let the audience know, you know, John, you're being critical of yourself. Sure, as a pro bodybuilder, yes, you could probably use some more leg, but honestly, man, as far as leg development goes, your legs aren't small. I'm going to tell you that right now.
No, but here's the difference. You know, the two NPC shows I did, there was no issue. But now all of a sudden you go to the pro level,
there's no
mud in there. You know, everybody's good. And so now you're not being compared to somebody that's not complete. Everybody that's in pro is complete.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that makes total sense.
So it's kind of a different layer of comparison. You know what I mean? If you compare me to, you know, kind of bodybuilders as a whole, oh yeah, my legs are great. You put me, you know, next to Olympia caliber guys, my legs are unbalanced.
Yeah, yeah, this is the cream of the crop now, that's for sure. So listen, tell me everybody that you're working with, tell me about sponsors. Tell people where they can find your ebook, the one that's out now, and where the new one will be. I want to hear all about, like, where else we can go to find things about John Anderson.
Well, if you go to my website, is the hub for everything. So it's John. My name is spelled a little different. If you Google me, you'll find me either way. But my website is John, J-O-N. Hyphen, not to be confused with the underscore, Anderson, A-N-D-E-R-S-E-N. So I got the double whammy on the name. if you go there, it'll profile my three careers. It goes into, you know, all the sponsors I've had and still have. My ebook is there, it's for sale. My clothing line, which is really killer, it's pretty edgy. It's really kind of devised around, you know, really developed around, you know, it's a clothing line, yes, but I say it's more of a movement. It's the word fuck with an asterisk, but it's all put into a box. Check it out. But it's really, it's all positive, edgy nice. Shit, but it's very positive. Like, it's fuck mental weakness.
Nice.
Fuck average, you know, nothing given. So basically it's really more of a way of life or a thought process or frame of mind. That's more of what I'm excited about with the clothing line, but it's, it's growing pretty good. We got, you know, men's attire, women's attire, hoodies, zip ups, putting up gym bags here pretty quick, backpacks. So that's a pretty killer deal there. I've been having a lot of fun with that. My ebook is on there. My second book, Feed the Cycle of Greatness, is actually going to be, it's going to be with Body.io for, I think the agreement's for a year.
Okay.
So you'll have to go and buy that from them. But it's that book is going to be ripping. That's going to change some people's lives. So I'm really excited for people to get their hands on that. But I would say the simplest way to learn more about me, and you, plus on my website, there's a link to all my social media. It's just go to my website, john-anderson.com.
Nice. I get the feeling that you really want to help people. You really want to help people be better and be more successful, man. And I think that's
absolutely.
That's really cool.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that early on in my career, I'll be honest, I was very selfish. You know, I was if somebody like in my training didn't bring something to the table, then don't come back here because I got a lot of work to do and I can't be dealing with someone making excuses, you know. But then as time went on, you know, my strongman career, my wrestling career and bodybuilding, I've come to realize that, you know, I have made some strides. I have accomplished some shit. And now just at 45 years old, I'm realizing that, you know, helping people better themselves is probably equally as satisfying as me reaching my own goals, you know, because that's kind of the next, it's kind of the next layer.
Yeah.
As an athlete, you kind of, at some point you can't compete at a high level. So then you morph into a coach or like my training facility. I help people, you know, become better athletes. You know, where, you know, moving from, you know, football to, you know, bodybuilding to strongman, you name it.
We didn't even talk about really, the training facility. I had no idea about this.
Yeah. If you go on here again on the website, it's all there, you know. But the bottom line is that, you know, helping people reach their goals is, you know, it's a different level of satisfaction, but very intense as well.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's awesome, man.
And, you know, keep in mind, I'm not a guy that somebody comes to me and says, I want to lose 30 pounds for a cruise. I just get the fuck out of here. You know, you want to change your lifestyle. You want to change your habitual patterns and live a better life for the next 20 years. I got your back. Let's go.
Nice.
You know, but I'm not going to help people hurt themselves. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I think that's great, man. I really appreciate your time, John, especially, you know, just about 2 weeks out from your show. I know the hurt that you're going through right now to get into shape, man. So thank you. I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, you know, problem. You know, kind of one of the little tricks I did during a good chunk of our talk is I was doing my cardio, which keeps me, you know, keeps my blood pumping. It keeps me excited. So it's easy to kind of be on point and have some fun with you on the radio because you're very correct. I'm hurting, brother.
Well, nice. Nice. Yeah, I always suggest to everybody, you know, everybody who listens to the show, most of them listen while they're doing cardio. So it's working for you. It's working for them. Man, you're a really positive guy. I really appreciate you sharing your courage. This has been really cool. So guys, for Advices Radio, I'm Scott McNally with IFBB Pro, strongman, and wrestler, John Anderson.
Thank you, brother. Much appreciated.
at Vices Radio Network.